Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Get a Job with Kathleen Brady. This show, which is titled after a book I just wrote called Get a Job, 10 Steps to Career Success, is dedicated to helping job seekers navigate the chaos and isolation of looking for a job at every stage of your career. So whether you just graduated from college, congratulations, and are looking for your first job, or maybe you're at a mid-level, just unhappy and wanting to think what else is out there, maybe you've been subject to a layoff recently. Whatever stage you're at in your career, we're here tonight to talk to you about some of the best practices of what works, what doesn't work, in everything job hunting related. So our goal is to sort of offer you some tips, suggestions, take your calls, answer your specific questions. It's all about offering you some creative solutions to everything that's related to job hunting and career advancement. Now, I'm your host, Kathleen Brady, and as I mentioned, I'm an author of a book, Get a Job. My company is called Career Planners, and I'm with you tonight bring to you 25 years of experience helping people reach their career goals. Now, I've been on both sides of this process. I have been I've worked at two universities, both Columbia and Fordham, in the Career Services Office, helping students and alumni put together job search action plans, interview effectively, all of those things. I've also been on the employer side, where I've had the opportunity to review resumes and cover letters and to interview candidates. So I've got a pretty broad perspective here, sort of that 360-degree world view. So I really have a fair amount of perspective and insight, and I am happy to pass along and share all the information I've gathered over the years with you. I'm delighted to be part of this Life Coach Radio Network here on Blog Talk Radio. Our executive producer, Russ Terry, has assembled an amazingly talented group of coaches to help listeners live their best lives. Now, it's interesting that all of these programs, our program is obviously very specifically related to job hunting, but all of the topics are so interrelated because it's all about life. You know, your career and your life are not separate things. We're on every other Wednesday, and in the alternate Wednesdays, my colleague Jose will be on talking about purposeful conversations. That's a topic very related to getting a job, purposeful conversations. How do you tell your story? Whether it's interviewing, networking, or just working day-to-day with people. So that would be a great program that you might want to tune into. There's also a couple others, Fun to Fortune on Tuesdays at lunchtime, or we've got a program called Transform Your Life in 60 Minutes. You know, again, I listened to that. If you wanted to go back and listen to that program, it was on the other day. It's in our archives. Fabulous information and so related to job hunting. We also have a program called Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen on Mondays at 8 p.m. Again, it's all about your value, your purpose in life, and what kind of job you're looking for. So there's something here on Blog Talk Radio, the Life Coach Radio Network, for everybody. I would encourage folks to check out the website on blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network. Check out all the archived programs and the list of upcoming programs. As I said, there's something for everyone. But our focus here tonight for the next hour is to talk about how to get a job. So my goal is to take your questions, so please feel free at any time to dial in to 646-716-9397, and I'm happy to answer your calls the best that I can. What we wanted to do tonight was use this particular broadcast, seeing as how this was our first one, to give you an overview of the job search process, give you really kind of the broad strokes, so take you through the whole process, soup to nuts, and then use the subsequent shows to focus on specific aspects of job hunting. So grab paper and pencil because there may be some information. There are websites I'll refer to and things that you might want to jot down that can be helpful to you. It is important to recognize that what we're going to talk about tonight, again, are the broad strokes. I think one of the most frustrating things that job seekers who go to panels and workshops and things like that in an hour's worth of time, it's very difficult to give very specific information. So you get the broad strokes, and that leaves people frustrated because they don't know how. That's the whole problem, if you will, with the job search process. It's overwhelming to people because they don't know how to do it. And think about anything else in your life that you're doing for the first time or you don't do very often. That just not knowing how to get started, what the process is, what you're supposed to expect, that alone causes a great deal of anxiety. So this show is about trying to help eliminate some of those frustrations and challenges by showing you how and giving you the specific information. I'm going to offer you a process and a structure. And the purpose of it is to kind of lay out the steps, if you will, or the broad rules, but that it's flexible enough that it's going to accommodate you at every level. So whether you're just starting out, the rules are the same. Whether you're just starting out, you're in that mid-career, or you're a little bit further down the pike, the process is the same. But it's interesting because, and as people start calling in, or you'll hear me saying things, and I know this used to frustrate my students to no end, they would ask a question, and I would begin every answer with, well, it depends. That's not because I don't know what I'm talking about. It's because when you're doing a job hunt, there is truly no one-size-fits-all. So if when you're reading job search advice or listening to other people, if anybody starts their advice to you with, you should always or you must never, I will go out on a limb here and tell you you're getting some bad advice. Because while those may be historically true or sort of ideals, there may be something specific about your situation that we can tweak it somehow and get around that rule. And so you want to hear those things, hear what the information, what they're trying to tell you, but there's a little bit of trusting your gut in this process as well. And I always say you want to worry less about doing it right and more about what your actions tell a potential employer about what you're doing. So it's about learning how to take a few risks in this whole process. Let's talk about the job market for a minute. There is good news and there's bad news. The good news is, despite what you might hear in the media and read in the newspapers, there are jobs to be had out there. The bad news is, those jobs are really hard to find, and they're even harder to get once you find them. You can go out on any major company. You could look at JPMorgan Chase or one of the accounts, Deloitte or Price Waterhouse or Lowe's, and you can look. They will tell you how many job openings they have in their company nationwide, and the numbers are in the hundreds, sometimes thousands, across the country. And so people say, but then why are we here? You know, we've got all these people looking for work. What's the issue? Where's the disconnect? And again, the problem is, and here's the downside to the market, is it's completely chaotic. And the rules have all changed and on both sides, and nobody quite knows what they are. So the old rules don't apply. It used to be simply you drop a resume, kind of chronological order. Here's what I've done. Here's what I know. You put that on paper. You answer a few ads, you go on a couple of interviews, and usually you had a couple of job offers to choose from. It doesn't quite happen that way anymore. Now we've got technology has been introduced into the system, which has completely mucked up the system quite a bit for us. And this fact that there are no rules, again, makes it so overwhelming because people are trying to be linear and logical in a process that is anything but linear and logical. So it's about learning how to be fearless in this process and learning how to trust your gut. I say that with a little bit of a caveat because while you want to be fearless, you want to balance that out, you don't want to be foolish. Because, again, all of your actions are going to tell people something about you, your prospective employer. I'll give you an example. You know, people are saying, well, it's all about getting noticed and how do you get your resume noticed from all the others. And I was working with a young law student at one point, and, you know, the market was tight. And this particular law student decided that he was going to be clever, and he put his resume in the form of a subpoena and sent it to all the different law firms. Yes, his resume got noticed, but he did not get an interview because you want to do something to get noticed, but not something that you get noticed and it gets hung up on the lunchroom wall going, hey, look at this joker and see how what he did. That's not how you want to be noticed. So you want to balance out sort of taking a few risks, but you want to make sure that you're not doing something that's foolish and is going to reflect badly on you. So, and again, sometimes working with a coach or using the resources that are available to you, kind of doing a little reality check with people in the process will be very helpful in terms of helping you find where the fearless versus foolish line is. So let's talk a little bit about what the job hunting process. It is a three-phase process. It starts with self-assessment. You got to know who you are and what it is you have to offer and sell people. You got to do market assessments. You have to know what's going on in the market and who needs what you're selling. And then the implementation. That's the writing of the resumes, the cover letters, the interviews, getting all of the mechanics down of the job hunt. I will tell you the biggest mistake that job hunters make is they start with the implementation. They just kind of get their resume together and throw it out without a whole lot of thought to what it is that they have to offer or what's going on in the marketplace. Just, I need a job, sort of the mindset that folks have. The reality is, if you don't do those first two steps, your implementation is going to be flawed. There's just no way around that because you're just sort of throwing things out there and seeing what sticks. Might you be successful? Sure. But remember, we're trying to get you to look beyond just getting a job. And this is about launching a career or making a wise choice that's going to lead to the next thing. And that's the thing that you want to think about. The other mistake people make, people who do say, okay, well, I'll spend a little time doing the self-assessment and or market assessment, they put too much emphasis on one or the other. So I'm a big believer, and I work with clients a lot on self-assessment, and so we spend a lot of time there. What are your wants and needs? What are your values? What's important to you? What are you good at? What do you want to do? Those kinds of things. And so people spend so much of their time focused on what they want, they give very little thought to what the market needs and how what they want is going to be useful in the market. And you have to understand there are all those wants and needs. You may have to prioritize them because you may not get them all at one time. And so you have to know what they are, and then you have to think about what are you willing to sacrifice or put on hold in order to get something that you want. So you've got to think about those things. So that one mistake is they sort of think that the market is going to bend to them and give us everything you want. And I have, without a doubt, and I'm not kidding you when I tell you, I have a client say to me, you know what, I want a job that pays a lot of money, that's 5 miles from my house, that is fun and interesting work, that challenges me, where the people are just a delight to go to work with every day. Oh, and I want to be able to go home in time for dinner, and I don't want to have to work weekends. Okay, that's maybe there is possible, may not be possible all at the same time. So, you know, of those things, you know, would you be willing maybe to go 10 or 15 miles from home to get all that? You know, so you have to think about those things. The flip side of that, the people who make another mistake, are the people who only focus on what the market needs. So those are the folks who say, well, I'm going to be an accountant because, well, you know what, there's always going to be work for accountants. I hate accounting, I hate numbers, I hate money, but you know what, that's something I should know how to do, and there'll be job security there. And so they do that, and they try and fit themselves in to what the world of work needs without really spending a whole lot of time thinking about, is this going to make them happy and bring them any kind of joy? And you know, people often say to me, look, you know what, I need a job, I got to pay my mortgage, I got to pay back my student loans, I'm a little less worried about joy. But if you find something that you have that brings you, if not joy, at least brings you a lack of misery, is another way to think about that, you're going to be much more successful because you're going to be more motivated to do things, you'll be more engaged in your work, and you'll just, by definition, then be more successful. So the real challenge is doing the self-assessment, finding out what it is that's important to you, what are your wants and needs, what's going on in the market, what are their wants and needs, and where do those two things intersect? Once you know that, then the implementation becomes easy. But that's the heavy lifting and the hard work of the job hunt have to come in the beginning. Keep in mind that the basic question in every interview, and I don't care whether you are interviewing as a lawyer or an accountant or teacher or, you know, to be a seasonal help at Lowe's, doesn't matter what the job is. Every job, every interview is about, why should I hire you? And as the job seeker, your job is to have an answer that is employer-focused. Nobody cares, I don't mean to be mean, but nobody cares that you need a job because your student loan payments are coming July 1 or because you've got three kids in college and you just bought a new house. That does not tell an employer what value you bring to them. So you really have to figure out what is it that you offer. Every job is a joint venture in problem solving. The employer has a problem or an issue that needs to be addressed, and they want a worker who is going to be able to fill that problem and solve that for them. So your goal is to always be thinking about, what is the value added that I bring? Now, for my new grads on the line, just want you to know, a lot of times they'll say, I don't know, I just graduated college, I don't have any experience, what do I know? If that's what you think, then you're going to have a tough time in the job market. What you have to be able to do is think about, look at what you have done, and what you're selling sometimes is enthusiasm and eagerness to enter this industry that you've just been preparing for 4 years or longer if you're graduating from graduate school. You want to talk about leadership skills that you developed running, you know, your student government or, you know, writing on your school paper or whatever it is that you might have done in terms of your extracurricular. You want to be talking about cutting-edge information that you have because you've just been studying with a leading authority on a particular topic in class. So you've got to really think about what it is you have to offer. And every single person has something to offer. It's your job to figure out what that is, and if you can't figure it out alone, to get some help, you know, to help you figure out what that is. I also want to say, too, for those of you who are in the mid-career change, that you're thinking about, well, you know, I'm trying to change industries and I really don't have this, or I'm missing some piece to this puzzle, or they don't care about my past experience. Again, all jobs are joint ventures in problem solving. So while you might have a special knowledge that they don't care about, you want to focus on the process of what it is that you've done. So because, again, think in terms of the common denominator verbs. It's almost like explain what you do on a daily basis in very basic, you know, kind of as if you're explaining it to a seven-year-old so that they understand what you do. Those verbs will then help you figure out what the process is. I'll give you a very specific example to this. When I worked at the school, at the law school, we had a number of people who were coming back to law school for second careers. And I remember talking to a woman who was a teacher, and she had taught for maybe, I don't know, 10 years or so, and she wanted to be a litigator. And she said, you know what, I just was a teacher, like third grade for 10 years. Nobody cares about that. Well, if you tell the story like that, of course no one's going to care about that. I said, but what do teachers, third grade teachers do? And kind of, it was like pulling teeth to get out of her. I said, they take very large, complex ideas, and a math problem or a science problem or even history is a large, complex idea to a third grader. And they break it down into the small, manageable steps to lead their audience to the conclusion that they want them to get to. Well, isn't that what trial lawyers do? So now she goes, okay, I get it. So now, instead of saying, well, I'm just a teacher, what do I know? She can say, listen, I spent 10 years as a teacher, and let me tell you why that's going to make me a better litigator. Now you've got something to say. And so always be thinking in terms of what are those verbs. So wherever you're at in terms of that first phase of your job search, again, whether you're a beginner, middle, or end of toward the end of your career, the self-assessment piece, the quick and dirty here, and we will spend at least two or three upcoming programs talking just about self-assessment because this piece is so critical. But in the quick and dirty, I want to say to you, identify your success patterns. You've got to look at what are the things that you've been successful at over the course of your life and think about your life in segments. So if you're older and you can break it into, you know, high school, college, my 20s, 30s, 40s, if you're older, or if you're just starting out, you know, high school, college, graduate school, you know, and think in terms of those blocks in your life. And what are the things that you've done that you're proud of and you feel were a success? And what do they have in common? I often said one of the things that I realized when I went through this process myself, I had realized as I was doing my success patterns, I had a story from the fourth grade where I had to stand up and give an oral presentation on Guatemala. And I did that. And then I had another story of when I was in college and I had to do a presentation on a topic I knew really well, but I was a little bit unprepared for. I just had a couple of notes written on a cocktail napkin from the night before. And then I had another thing from a professional speaking engagement. And then I realized through the course of that, that one of my successes is I'm a fairly good public speaker. And I'll let you all be the judge of that tonight. But it was one of those things for me I never thought of until that moment that was a skill. I just thought, well, anybody can do that. And that's not true. So you want to be looking for those things that you do well that come just so naturally and easily to you that you've used over and over and over again in your life. And if you take that time to reflect back, those patterns begin to emerge and you start to see them. So your job in this whole notion of success patterns, once you know what they are, you want to make sure in the job search that you are focusing on the strengths, the assets, and the talents, not on your shortcomings. So many job seekers start the conversation with, even though I don't have X, or I went to this school instead of that. We don't need to know what's wrong with you. It's the employer's job to figure out what's wrong with you. It's your job to tell them what's right with you. I'm not suggesting anybody lie or even over-exaggerate. But I am saying that you start with your strengths. Always lead with your strengths. And you almost want to think about a commercial. Let's assume for a moment that you are selling toothpaste. And all the research says that if you use this toothpaste, you will never get a cavity. It doesn't taste great, but you'll never get a cavity. You do not open your commercial by saying, well, this toothpaste tastes terrible, but you'll never get a cavity. Because the only thing people remember is it doesn't taste good. You start it the other way around. Studies show that you'll never get a cavity if you use this toothpaste. Someone's bound to ask you the question at some point, yeah, well, how does it taste? Then you be honest. Doesn't taste as good as the others, but you'll never get a cavity. Now you've had two opportunities to play to the strengths. And just like job hunting, there are going to be people who value taste over lack of cavities. You're not going to win those people over. That's okay. Move on. You want to find the people who want the same things you want, and then you know you have the right match. So think about that as you're trying to think through what your strengths and assets are. The other trick to this is don't accept conventional wisdom unconditionally. Every single industry has its rules and its kind of preconceived notions about who they'll hire, who they won't hire. I'm not saying that those things don't exist. Of course they exist. I'm just saying don't accept them. Hear them and figure out, is there a way around them? It's if this is something, whatever your goal is, once you're passionate about it, once you know that this is what you want to do, it's not going to matter because you'll be able to figure out a way around it. I often, when I talk about don't accept conventional wisdom unconditionally, I like to share this story. There is a guy, I'm forgetting his name at the moment, Perry, I think his last name, I forget his first name, Perry. He was played football for San Jose State, and he broke his leg on the football field. And the leg was so badly broken that it had to be amputated from the knee down. And I remember watching him one morning on the Today Show, and he said, I will play football again. And I remember thinking to myself, this poor kid, he's kind of all on drugs and from the pain. He has no idea. He doesn't have a leg. He's not going to be able to play football. Well, don't you know that 2 years later, this guy was on the football field, San Jose State, playing football again, and people in the audience were hard-pressed to figure out who's the guy who only has one leg out there. He said he'd play football again, and he did. even though conventional wisdom would tell you a guy with one leg can't play football. Now, I say that. This was not magical thinking. This wasn't just, oh, he underwent something like 26 operations and countless hours of therapy, and I don't know this man, and I suspect there were moments when he thought, you know what, I'll give up, and he didn't, and he played football again. So those are the kind of stories that you want to think about when someone says you can't. You want to really hear that and think, really, I can't? Or do I just need to figure out a way around that? I can't, and think about that. So don't accept conventional wisdom unconditionally. Question it and see how you can work your way around it. As you're thinking about this self-assessment and kind of moving forward, it's focusing on the strengths. Don't accept it unconditionally. And build yourself a board of advisors, people who can help you and tell you, help you test your theories about things. So you want to reach out to other people and really build your network. Once you have those things, then you start to develop your action plan. And it's all about goal setting, kind of your long-term goals and your short-term goals. There's a great title to a book called If You Don't Know Where You're Going, You're Happy Where You Are. You have to have an idea of what it is you're trying to do. And I'm not saying, when I was in college, people used to say, you have to have a 10-year plan and then a 5-year plan. I don't know, 10-year plan, the world is changing so quickly, I'm not sure that there are going to be jobs 10 years from now that don't exist today. So I think that's a little overwhelming. But you have to have some targets and some goals and know what it is you're working towards. And so, again, we will do another whole show on how to set those long-term goals and then how to break them into sort of shorter, more manageable goals. Once you have your action plan in place and you develop it, kind of know where you're going, then you actually have to implement it. And I know that seems like such a silly step to have to say to people, but I have worked with incredibly thoughtful people who spend years and years and years thinking about what they're going to do and planning and mapping out the strategy and never take an action. Thinking about it and planning is incredibly important, but not if you're only going to do that. You really have to implement the action plan if you really want to see any forward motions. You want to seek feedback from people along the way, make course corrections. This is not about worrying about failing. You start in one direction in the process, and sometimes that takes you a little bit further down the road, and you could see another path, and so you go in a different direction, and that's perfectly appropriate. That's all part of the job search process. What you know today is going to be different from what you know a year from now. And so don't keep down a road that you're not happy going. Don't be afraid to lateral or to go off the beaten path a little bit. And the last piece in this process is you really have to be patient. And as an incredibly impatient person myself, I feel somewhat disingenuous saying that, because once I set a goal, I know I want it and I want it now. Well, it doesn't work that way. And with a job search in particular, it rarely happens on your time frame. Excuse me. But you really want to figure out, you really kind of have to pace yourself, keep enough things in the pipeline and find ways to keep yourself distracted kind of what's worth waiting for. The whole thing about all of this is when you're thinking about your career and you're setting those goals, you want to avoid what I call the should goals, the things you should do. I should be an accountant because that's where all the jobs are. I should take that job with my uncle's construction company so that I get a paycheck and my parents will get off my back, even though I'd rather be working on Wall Street and I have no interest in doing construction. I should. Taking advantage of or participating in should goals is a little bit like buying a bad pair of uncomfortable shoes. You can pull it off for a while. You might even get compliments about how cool those shoes look. But, man, after a while, this is just not where I'm supposed to be. So if you hear yourself or feel yourself saying, I should do this, you got to stop and pull back and reflect a little bit. Here are four important questions as you're thinking about the self-assessment and what kind of job it is that you're looking for and where it is that you're going. These are the four critical questions that you want to ask of yourself and anyone that you're trying to help with a job hunt. This is one of the things, grab a piece of paper and a pencil, because these are the four critical questions that you won't have an answer for right now, but you certainly do want to reflect on. First question is, what do you want? You have got to be able to articulate that. If you can't articulate that, then you're in trouble. And I don't care what you want is, how bad it sounds, you might think, or how juvenile. I want to make a lot of money. I want to work at, you know, X company. Whatever it might be, state it emphatically. The next question is, why do you want that? Sounds like a silly question sometimes to people. But the why do you want that, that's your goal. That's truly the goal. And once you could get to the why behind the what, sometimes it expands the what. So it's not the only thing. You start to see there are other possibilities and other ways to get to the why. Those two questions are so incredibly important. What do you want? Why do you want it? Once you know that, then you go into the action mode and you ask, what do you have to do to get it? And then finally, how willing are you to do those things? Now, I talk about this a lot, and I've written about this in my blog, and there's two specific examples I want to share with you just to kind of illustrate these points. So what do you want? I've had a client one time. She was a 40-year-old accountant, and she declared, what do I want? She thought she was being funny. She said, I want to be a prima ballerina. Okay, now, I have to admit, I was thinking, okay, well, this woman is about 30 pounds overweight, and she probably hasn't worn a tutu since she was 7, but who am I to squash someone's dreams or make any judgments? I didn't point any of those things out to her. I simply said, why do you want to be a prima ballerina? To which she responded, because I just love the ballet and I love everything about dance and it's just fabulous, and she was just very enthusiastic about being a ballerina. And I said, okay, well, what would you need to do to become a prima ballerina at the age 40? See, I don't need to point out the obvious. She'll get there. And she said, well, you know, I would need to start dancing again, which would mean I'd probably need to quit my current job so that I could spend 8 to 10 hours a day practicing. And so I'd probably need to give up fried food and my favorite Oreos so I could drop some weight. Then I would need to be prepared for the inevitable aches and pains that are going to come along with dancing for 8 hours a day. And I asked her, are you prepared to do those things? To which she would respond, no, but I still want to be a prima ballerina. Okay, so there's a disconnect, right? So at that point, then we go back to the why. Well, the why do you want to be a prima ballerina? Because she said she loved everything about ballet. So now we can start brainstorming. What's another way to be around ballet where you don't have to be the prima ballerina? Now we start brainstorming. Well, I could be an accountant for New York City Ballet or a dance studio, or maybe I could open my own studio. Start brainstorming. Well, let's play with those a little bit. So you open your own studio. What would you have to do to make that happen? Well, I'd have to prepare a business plan. I'd have to go and look and rent space. I'd probably have to hire some dancers. And, you know, and you kind of think through what you would need to do. Are you prepared to do those things? Well, yeah, those things I can do. I know how to do that. That would be fun to do. Now you've got some energy. So by exploring the why to be around dance, we're able to expand the what. So really spend some time thinking about this stuff. You know, we sort of think in a bad market, we have to just jump right into action. And the thinking, we don't give anybody any credit for just thinking. But really sitting and reflecting on the why really is going to be critical to that whole story. It is important to play with dreams. I often tell my clients when they come in that I like to think of my office as a classroom of dreams, playground of dreams, where we just sit and everything is possible within the confines of my office. And we just think about it. You want to be a prima ballerina? All right, you're a prima ballerina. What does that look like? And really kind of think it through. Because a lot of times you start thinking about things and you realize, really, that's not really what I want. It sort of sounds nice and it's a fantasy, but it then allows you to stay stuck because you say, well, I can never do that, so I might as well just stay in this job that I hate. Well, that's not the only option. Maybe there are other options, so let's explore, let's play. There is a great importance of dreaming and I like to call magical thinking. Let's start there. Let's see where it takes us. And if at some point, once we can put some action around it, then we can make this magical thinking turn into a goal. And that's the difference between, you know, that magical thinking and a goal is you're putting some action steps behind it. The thing that you want to remember, no matter what stage you're at, you get to control your own story and your own destiny. It's all about the actions that you take. There are far too many recent graduates who just feel discouraged about the job market. So, I don't have any experience. I'm not going to get a job. And they spend their time home, you know, playing Xbox. Or people who are laid off thinking, oh, I'll never get a job again. And then they just take no action. It's hard. It's absolutely hard work. But the only guarantee I can make in this whole process is if you do nothing, nothing will happen. So if you're feeling discouraged, I often tell people, you want to do what I call play. You get to take the three-day rule. And that means whether you're just feeling bummed about this whole situation or, you know, you've just gotten laid off or, you know, you're just trying to process what you want to do, you're allowed to take 3 days to just feel bad and just feel sorry for yourself because the job search is hard and it stinks and you hate doing it and it's a lot of work and all of those things are true. You need to feel those things, but you only have 3 days. I don't care what you do during those 3 days. You don't have to shower. You can eat a pint of ice cream. You can punch a hole in the wall as long as you have health insurance, but be careful about that. Whatever it is that you need to do, sit in the dark, but on the third day, you must rise. And you must take action. It could be a small action. It may mean just getting into the, you know, looking online for something. It may mean you definitely have to get up and shower. That's probably the first thing you have to do if you haven't showered for 3 days. But you have to start taking some action because if you allow yourself to keep, I'm never going to get a job, then and you never take any action because you believe that, then it's not going to happen for you. So, again, I just want to give the call-in number again. If anybody's got any questions so far on self-assessment, the number is 646-716-9397. And again, the next two shows from now, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about self-assessment and really giving you some critical steps and some tools that you can use to help you think through these questions and sort of the whole process. But, you know, the quick and dirty, the broad stroke is the what do you want, why do you want it, what must you do to make that happen, and are you willing to do those things? Assuming for a moment now, just to kind of give you a sense of the whole process, you got a sense of, you know, who you are and what it is you're selling and what it is you're looking for, now we need to move to market assessment. Market assessment is trying to figure out what is going on in the world of work. You must educate yourself about what's going on in the world of work and what they need because that's a world that's already in progress. So they've already got some established rules and some established needs, and you've got to figure out what is your point of entry into that world. A couple of different ways, a number of different ways that you can do market assessment, market research. First, of course, is the Internet. God bless the Internet. If you're just graduating from college, you probably don't know a time before the Internet. I will tell you, job hunting was a lot harder without the Internet in a lot of ways. We didn't have the same access to immediate information about things. And now everything is very much at your fingertips. You can do a Google search to find out a company. There are scores of websites that are out there that will give you information about job postings, newspapers, newsreels. There's something for everybody out there. It's almost to the other extreme that there's almost too much information, and it's really difficult for people to figure out. The first place you always want to start is with that kind of market research on the Internet and reading newspapers and just trying to get a sense of what's going on in the world. But you have to go beyond that. You cannot hide behind your computer screen and think that that's where all the information is. You really have got to spend some time talking to people. People who are in the industry, in the field, doing the things that you think you want to do. And I know for so many people, they hear the word networking and they absolutely cringe and their skin crawls. This is a place where people get stuck. This is a place, again, because when you're giving out sort of generic information, you just say to people, you got to network. And people don't quite know how to do it. Let me give you just a couple of quick tips. And again, we're going to have an entire show just on networking for folks. Networking is about getting air, advice, information, referrals. It really is that simple. And if you think about it, you network quite naturally in almost every area of your life except job hunting. So you may move to a new neighborhood and a random people on the street or people you meet in the elevator, you might say, where's the best place to get a bagel? Who's the best dry cleaners around here? You know what? I'm looking for an Italian restaurant. And complete strangers will give you information. Or maybe you're going traveling to a country you haven't been to before, and all of a sudden, you know, you think, well, you know, Joe's been to Ireland. Let me go call him and see what where he went and what he's doing, and you get information that way. Job hunting is the same thing. You really want to talk to people and get their advice, information, referrals. The key mistake people make in networking is they don't ask the right question. If the only question that you ask of people is, I'm looking for a job, do you know of any job openings? Most of us, including me, and it is my business to know where the jobs are, we're going to tell you no. I'll keep you in mind, but nothing comes to mind. You've got to be able to ask people better questions, and you've got to ask questions that are doable. If somebody calls me and says, hey, I know you used to work at Fordham. Could you get me a job there? No, that's a completely inappropriate question. You can't ask someone to do that. That's putting someone on the spot. If you called and said, hey, I saw this job opening at Fordham. Could you tell me what it's like to work there? Do you know anybody who's still there that you might be willing to introduce me to? Well, you know, now we've got a relationship going, and this is somebody that I like, and I think, yeah, you know what, maybe I could introduce him. So you want to think strategically for each person that you're going to you want something from. You want to think about what is it that you want from them. And here is where working with a coach or a buddy or somebody in your network could be very helpful to you in helping you craft those kinds of questions, those meaningful questions, to ask them for something doable. It's all about asking the right question. And I spend an awful lot of time with people. I've had people walk in with their Rolodex and say, you know, okay, well, there's Bob. Tell me about your relationship with Bob. How do you think he can help you? And all right, let's hold off on him. Who's Mary? How do you know Mary? Let's start here and ask her this. And then you have to keep track of all these people that you're talking to. It's incredibly time consuming, but you have to think about how you have to have those conversations are going to help advance the ball, and they're all part of the process. Couple of things to think about. Oh, first, people, and there's, because I know there's at least one of you in the audience thinking, I don't know anybody. I've had people say that to me. I don't know anybody. I had one client I was working with, a fairly junior guy. He was only working maybe 2 years, and he had gotten laid off through no fault of his own. It was a company restructuring, and he was a very shy guy, and he said, I don't know anybody. And I said, of course you know somebody. And he said, I don't know anybody. So I challenged him. I said, this week your homework assignment is to come back with one name, one person that you think of that you can talk to that could be helpful to you. And he's like, I'm going to come back empty-handed. But to make a long story short, he came back the next week, and the only person he could think of was a colleague he had worked with who had been let go a year earlier. And he reached out to that guy and said, you know, this is my situation, this is what's happening. That guy introduced him to two people who introduced him to people, and all you need is one to get the ball rolling. But most of us know more than one. You want to think about, we used to say in the old days, you know, just going to events and collecting business cards, it's not the person who collects the most business cards wins. That doesn't mean you've got the best relationship with people. You really want to make sure that you are, I mean, this whole world operates in a very relational way. So you want to make sure that you are leaving a positive impression on people. So you are better off going to an event and getting 5 cards of people that you've actually had a real conversation with, that when you send them an email the next day or the next week, they'll go, oh, yeah, I remember meeting him. Rather than going around just handing out 500 business cards and say, hey, well, 500 people have my business card. It's meaningless. Doesn't mean anything because nobody remembers who you are. The same is true with LinkedIn. I cannot tell you, in the last week alone, I've gotten at least 20 connections from people just sending the generic, hi, I'd like to link to you. I have no idea who these people are, and I won't link to you unless there is some reason that I can see why you might be asking to link to me. So at the very least, if you're going to reach out to somebody that you don't know and try to link to them, what you want to do is say why. you know, hi, I saw that you work at J.P. Morgan, and, you know, I'm interested in opportunities there. I would love to have the opportunity to link with you to learn more about what you do. They may say no, but that's much better than just sort of pretending to be someone's friend, and it will certainly leave much more of an impression. So if, in my mind, you know, having the most connections on LinkedIn or the most friends on Facebook doesn't necessarily serve you well. You want to make sure that you're building these relationships with people. LinkedIn is incredibly important in terms of job hunting, no matter what stage of your career you're at. You want to have a LinkedIn profile. I will tell you, employers use that to look folks up. And, you know, just, again, it doesn't have to be a lot, but you want to make sure that you've got sort of the basic information about you. This is not a place to be putting on information about I'm looking for a job or, you know, again, you want to manage and control the image and the reputation and think about what does this say to a prospective employer who doesn't know me, who sees this information for the first time. So it's really about managing your professional brand, so you want to be smart about it. But market assessment is using your contacts is incredibly important. I will say to the people on the phone who are or on the show that are more junior, the more junior people tend to be really good at, they're very social, so very good at asking questions of their peer group and building a sense of community, and that's fabulous and wonderful. Be careful, though, that you're only asking your peer group. You want to think about in a job hunt, the people who are in a position to hire you are most likely to be your parents' age, maybe even your grandparents' age. So those are folks that you want to run some of your ideas past a little bit, because what makes sense in the world of work to somebody who's 25 is a complete turnoff to those of us who are in our 50s. And so you want to make sure that you're hitting the mark, and those are the people that you want to impress. I'm not saying that you're wrong in your approach. I'm just saying get some feedback and figure out is there a way to adapt it or mollify it in some way so that it's got broader appeal for you. So kind of get it from all sides. And I say the same thing to the more senior folks who are in a job hunt. Talk to your kids who've done job searches and how are they using technology, and maybe there are ways and things that you can learn from them that's going to improve your job search as well. So the information and the support runs in both directions. When you're thinking about your networks, too, and the big question I always get is, well, you know, I called them once, I can't call them again. That's not true. If there are new reasons to stay in touch with people, you know, you want to find reasons to kind of keep them in the loop, keep them apprised of your job search. But, again, it's about sort of finding that fine line between being informative and being a pest. And you never want to be a pest. But there are ways to reach out to people multiple times. You want to be wise and strategic about it, again, and that's why working with a coach could be something that's very helpful in helping you think through some of those strategies or, you know, having a buddy system in this whole process. The one thing that I cannot stress enough, and I said it a little bit before, but every profession, every industry has its preconceived rules, and some of us would call those the outer blocks, the things that are going to get in our way of getting where we want to go. You want to know what they are, but you do not want to accept them unconditionally. You want to start thinking and switching your thinking from I can't because to how can I. That little shift in thinking, I can't because I'm too young, I don't have enough experience, I'm too old, I have too much experience, I have the wrong experience, I went to the wrong school, I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm black, I'm white, I'm gay, I'm straight. There's always a reason why you're not getting the job. We're all looking for that normal explanation that may or may not be there. So if you can shift your thinking from I can't because to how can I, kind of come up with a plan of action, you would be amazed at the things that you're going to be able to accomplish no matter what the rules tell you. So once you've done all of your self-assessment, you've done a little bit of market assessment, you've been watching and figuring out what's going on in the world by reading the newspapers and knowing what new legislation, how it's going to impact your career in healthcare, and or, you know, whatever's going on, how is it going to impact your industry, your company, your department, you know, kind of look at that. now you can start to develop that what everyone calls the elevator pitch. I hate that expression, but I think of it as, what's your message? What do you want to tell people? How do you want to introduce yourself? Hi, I'm Kathleen. I'm looking for a job. Big deal. Join the ranks. Everybody is. Doesn't tell anybody, doesn't give anybody any information about what I could do. If you say, oh, my name's Kathleen, I just graduated from Fordham with a degree in sociology, and I'm looking for opportunities to do X, Y, and Z, well, now people got a little something to go on. So you got to think about that. And again, that message may change a little bit depending on who your audience is, who you're talking to, because you might want to emphasize slightly different things, but it's essentially, at the core, it's who you are and what it is you want people to know about you. And it's your job to come up with that pitch and figure out how it is you want to say that. So once you have all that, now what you have to do is the implementation. Look at that. We've gone through almost the entire show, and we haven't even talked about resumes and cover letters and things like that yet. That's because that's the easy part. The hard part is all the stuff that we've talked about. Once you do, you have all that, now you know where your wants and needs intersect with the world of work's wants and needs. Now you have to start preparing your resume and your marketing materials. Here's a website you want to write down. It's called excuse me, www.bestsampleresumes.com. This is one of the websites I've seen that have the best sample resumes of every industry, because you'll notice as you look through them what's going to work in the very conservative legal market or financial services industry is not going to work in the architecture industry or in the creative arts or some in other places. MBA resumes look very different from other careers. And I always see the MBAs, they have a lot of adjectives on them, hardworking, resilient, versatile. You know, if you put those kind of resumes on a law firm resume, people would laugh at you because just you saying it doesn't make it so. But that works in business. So you've got to have a general sense of who your target audience is so that you can know, how to market your resume. I will tell you that in many ways, the computer has made job hunting and resumes more complicated, because most companies don't even have a real human being looking at the first cut of resumes. They've got these intense algorithms that kind of circle through the resumes to find the key words, and they've got these algorithms set at some impossibly high, has to make it 95% of what they're looking for. So it's really important when you're crafting your resume and you're looking at these job descriptions to use language that they have in the post, as many of their words as you can get in. And that makes it more complicated, because now that means you may need to have multiple versions of your resume depending on who you're applying for. To give you a specific example, I was working with someone who, in her industry, she had an incredible career in recruiting and professional development. Well, in the industry she was targeting, they don't call it recruiting and professional development. They call it talent management and talent acquisition. So now everything she did, that she didn't have the word talent management or talent acquisition on her resume. And so she was getting these automatic thanks, but no thanks, you don't meet our needs. And we couldn't for the life of us figure out what the heck was going on there, because of course she met their needs. This is the exact job she had done in another industry. And so it was. We learned that you really have to think about the words on the resume. So it's worth paying the time to do that. And again, once one of the good things about having the network is, so now you post the job through their website, then you go back to LinkedIn and you type in the name of the company and you see anybody in my contact list connected to anybody at that company that I can follow up with. So now there's a real person. That's the way to get through the gatekeepers. So you always want to be creative. But you see how all these pieces, even though I've sort of described it in a linear and logical fashion, it's a lot of back and forth between, you know, the implementation and the market assessment. You kind of, in the self-assessment, you keep going back and forth between these different steps. A number of people have asked me, should I post my resume? I am of two minds of this. For those of you who are more junior, I think it's okay. If you're a fairly senior person, I wouldn't. If your employer does not know that you're looking for a job, I definitely would not, because you don't know who's searching these databases. There's not a whole lot of privacy there. I would, if you're going to post them somewhere, my advice would be, and again, this is sort of generic and it's going to depend on each person, I would be more inclined to say, yeah, it's okay to post it on a company website where only that company is searching for it, because then they have you know, paid recruiters internally who are looking and assessing people's credentials as positions become available. I would try to avoid just posting them on just sort of generic job boards. I'm not sure who's looking at them, and there's a little bit less control of the story for you. So just something to think about. I would also say, too, most of these places will allow you to put a cover letter. Take the time to write the cover letter. I know it's a pain to write them, but a cover letter really fleshes out what's on your resume. They should be more than, as you can see from my resume, I graduated this year and I worked at these three places. Tell us something a little bit different, something that's not on the resume that allows your personality and to shine through a little bit and gives them a little bit more data than is just on the resume. I think they're incredibly important. But you got to spend time with them. There can't be typos. You can't misspell the company's name. I've seen people lose job offers for sending thank you notes with the, you know, misspelling of the name. So you really have to, because again, what does that tell an employer about you? So this is a person who's sloppy. So you really want to be careful. And again, we're going to spend an entire show talking about how to apply to job online and those unbelievably frustrating application forms that you are often required to fill out. I wish I could tell you there was a way around them, but it is a hoop that they're making people jump through. And if you want that job, sometimes you have to jump through that hoop. You can try and see if there's a network and see if there's some way around it, but most times my experience has been, even when you have a connect at a company, they're going to say you got to apply through, you got to be in the system, so you still have to go through that particular hoop anyway. So assuming now you've done all the self-assessment, the market assessment, you've gotten the resumes, now you're in the interview. This is where you'll really see the importance of the self-assessment and market assessment kicked in, because now you know what the market needs, you know what you're selling, and you know how to put it together for them, and you know how to show the value added. The why should I hire you question is what you want to answer. And again, interviewing, we're going to spend an entire program on this. The quick and dirty of interviewing is, what are your three main selling points? What are the three things that you're going to tell these people? I don't care what question they ask you. You're going to make sure that they know these three things about you, and you're going to have a story to back it up. So you don't want to just say, I'm organized or I'm a people person. You got to prove that. You know, I have strong people skills. For example, there's a client that everybody at the firm really can't get along with at all. He's fired so many people, and he and I get along quite well, and I seem to be able to manage him and his expectations and keep him happy. Well, okay, that's more than just you telling me you've got people skills. Now you've shown me. So think about that. The other question that people often ask me about is, when do we talk about salary? I know salary is important, and it's sort of silly in this whole process that that's the last thing we talk about. But you always want to be prepared to discuss it, but you never want to bring it up. So rule of thumb is he who talks money first loses. But sometimes, especially on these application forms, you can't get to the next page and submit your application unless you answer the salary question. So, and here's another one you want to write these down, payscale.com and salary.com. You want to sort of do your homework so you've kind of got a number in your head before everything starts. And that's incredibly important. Payscale's got what-if scenarios for you. So I hope that this has been helpful for you. You know, you can expect to change jobs 5 to 7 times in your lifetime, so you want to learn how. I hope that you'll listen biweekly to this show. Like us on Facebook at KB Career Planners to get updates. And, of course, listen to the next shows coming up. We've got Thursday night, Triumph Through Transition, May 16th. We have on Saturday, Have Fun Again, Stress Managing for Busy People at 1 o'clock on Saturday. And then, of course, on Sunday, we have Super Soul Sunday. That's Sundays at noon. So we hope that you'll join us again. My next show is May 29th at 7:30, and we will be talking about market assessments. So thank you so much for spending this time with us. I hope that you've got a good sense of the overview of the process, and you'll come back for more and get some more specific information and help, and that you will be successful at getting a job. Thanks so much.